2 p.m. We now have a quorum. The Pacific City Joint Water and Sanitary Authority Board of Directors meeting is in session for October 11th, 2022. It is a video virtual conference call. Roll call, Ann Price.
Here.
Sean, are you here?
I'm here.
Okay. And for the record at this time, Director Gogas is not here, but was planning on being here. I'm Tom Donahue, the chair, and I am here. All right, we'll go ahead to item three, the minutes. Has anybody noticed any corrections or errors that need to be taken care of for the September 13th, 2022 business meeting minutes?
I did not. I'm not hearing anything from Sean or you, so I'll move that we approve the September 13th, 2022 business meeting minutes.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the business meeting minutes for September 13, 2022 as presented. All those in favor say aye. Raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye. All three present directors have motioned in the aye, so that those meeting minutes are approved. Has anyone have any errors or corrections that need to be taken care of for the September 28, 2022 special meeting?
Hearing none, I will move that we approve the September 28, 2022 special meeting minutes.
I'll second.
We have a motion and second to approve the special meeting minutes for September 28th, 2022. All those in favor signify saying aye. Raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous. Those minutes are now approved. Item number four, financial report. Accounts payable for September 15th and September 30th of 2022. Any comments about those accounts payable?
I'll move that we approve the accounts payable for September 15th and September 30th of 2022.
I'll second.
We have a motion and second to approve the accounts payable for September 15th and September 30th, 2022. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, say nay. Raise your hand for aye.
Aye.
All three directors are in the affirmative. The accounts payable are approved. The general ledger for fiscal year 22-23 is item B on the financial report. Does anybody have any questions or about the general ledger? All right, hearing none, we'll move on to item number five, the manager's report. John, you have the floor.
Thanks, Tom.
Hey, Tom. Tom, I'm on.
Okay, for the record, Director Gogas is now online with us at 5:06 p.m.
As far as the manager's report, I scaled it back a bit. I've, kind of wondered, and I don't know if any of the board members present have any preference. I've been kind of, sometimes I decide to carry over things, I don't really have anything to report on, just to make sure it's evident that things are still in the works and still in process. I decided to remove some of the items that I don't have much to report on, just to reduce a little clutter and a little redundant reading from the board members. Several items on the manager's report I did want to emphasize. I've been discussing to some degree about the decant arm on one of our SBRs. This was a part that we waited for a long time. When it arrived, we found it was defective right out of the box. We had to send it back to the East Coast to be repaired. And I was really pleased about how quickly the manufacturer turned that around. And the decant arm is now installed and fully functional. There's a bit of a remaining issue regarding the limit switch on the unit. It was not the limit switch on this that controls its maximum up and down movement. That is controlled with a magnetic switch with a magnet that is actually within the shaft attached to the shaft screw of the device. That was not provided with the magnet, which hasn't hurt us because we were able to just take the perfectly good magnet out of the unit that had previously failed for other reasons and installed it on the new one, and it has been tested. It is working fine. We are able now to use both SBR react, both of the SBRs. We have not put the SBR number one online yet. I think we're planning to do that. We made it through the summer and the peak demand season just fine with one SBR. Well, I don't want to say just fine. It would have been nice to have two. But we have, you know, what we have proven to ourselves is even during the peak demands of summer, we can satisfactorily operate the treatment facility on one SBR even during our peak demands of summer. And if nothing else, it was a good test of our system. But I am nonetheless relieved that now we have both SBRs fully functional. And I'm getting...
What's an SBR?
Oh, I'm sorry. The core of our wastewater treatment plant and the core of the upgrades that we did several years ago was to add two sequencing batch reactors. These are the units that do nearly all of our wastewater treatment. Some of you may be familiar with activated sludge treatment plants. In a typical activated sludge treatment plant, you've got primary clarifiers, aeration basins, secondary clarifiers. Well, the nice thing about a sequencing batch reactor is it serves the purpose of multiple stages of treatment in one unit. So it serves as our settling basin, it serves as our aeration basin, and it allows us to do the same treatment as a traditional activated sludge plant, but it allows us to do it in a much smaller footprint. And so SBR stands for sequencing batch reactors. They are our primary treatment units when it comes to our wastewater treatment. So having them, one of them offline, waiting for this part, was a little nerve-wracking. I don't like not having redundancy. But the good news is that the decant arm, this is the arm that raises and lowers to decant the liquid out of the tank, that is actually what we discharge as effluent into the river. And so the decant arm raises and lowers to decant the tank as called for. And without that working, the SBR system was pretty much completely down. But we're back in business. I anticipate we'll put that unit online. Even though we don't really need it, I anticipate we'll put it online anyway. I think our preference is to run both SBRs simultaneously, regardless of what time of year it is. And so I anticipate putting that back online sometime very soon. The good news is we now have the capability to do that.
Alrighty, thank you.
Yep. Another project update, lift station upgrades. Finally, we've received the power panels, the control panels for our two lift station upgrade projects, one being Straub, the other one being Kiwanda. We are close to being able to move forward with that, and I'll bring, depending on what the quote comes in for the electrician's work, we've already reached out to an electrician, and they've come out and taken a look at it. This may be a situation where I have to get three quotes. Oftentimes, I don't know if I need three quotes until I get the first one, right? So I'm expecting to get the scope of work and the quote from the electrical electrician side of the work, which is all that is really left. And with any luck at all, we'll have these two lift stations upgraded by the end of November. I had originally hoped to have them done by like the end of May, but because of supply chain issues for certain electrical components, these panels were delayed much longer than we anticipated. But the great news is that with these two lift stations, and I think as most of you know, we are planning to move forward with additional upgrades. We still have to upgrade Madrona, Roger, Cindy, and oh my goodness, what's the other one? Leonard, help me out. Are you online? Madrona, oh, Beachy. And once we get those upgraded, our system will be in much better shape. When we put these in, I truly believe, and I'm putting myself on the line by saying so, that having to pull pumps and count rags, at least at these two lift stations, will be a complete thing of the past. So, you know, a badly needed upgrade, one I'm excited to get finished. The other item I wanted to mention is that the North Access Road paving project is completed. We are enjoying the benefits of that right now. We've got a very smooth, a very nice road coming into our yard, into our public works yard, into our wastewater treatment plant. And the staff are very happy about that. This will reduce quite a bit of ongoing maintenance for us just to continually grade that road and get the potholes out of it. And hopefully will contribute to durability and resiliency of our equipment. We've been driving over that road a long time, driving through those potholes a long time, and this is a project that was endorsed by nearly everybody that works at the treatment plant, and everybody's singing the praises of getting this job done. And it was done well, and it was done very quickly. I thought for sure we'd be in deep into the winter, if not into the spring, to get our foot in the door with the scheduling for our paver. And they had it done very quickly, and I'm pleased to report that. So outside of that, I don't have anything else to add from the manager's report.
All right. Thank you, John. I just had one question myself. You mentioned last month in your report that the VOD test, the DEQ, you petitioned them to dismiss that that test as unusual. Did you get a determination from that?
I did, and thank you, Tom. I don't know why I forgot to bring that up. We did, and I will say that it did not go our way, and it didn't go our way because I didn't make a strong enough case for it. It did not go our way because the burden of proof to invalidate data is extremely high. We have to be able to prove, without pretty much a reasonable doubt, we need to, that it was not representative. We need to not only do that, but if it was unrepresentative, meaning in this case that the iron bacteria that was present was a contaminant to our sample, I have to prove how it got in there, and that's a nearly impossible task. What I suspect...
Are we liable for fines or anything like that?
No.
How often do we take this test?
Well, we're required to take a BOD test weekly.
Have we had any reoccurrence?
No. In fact, this result being actually a little bit higher than 40 parts per million or milligrams per liter, BOD, was well over twice what we've ever seen since we've put the new plan online. Every test that we've done since then has been in the 2 to 3 range. This one test was north of 40. I fought tooth and nail on this, and because of the nearly impossible standard of absolute proof, they were not able to invalidate the results. What this will result in is a warning letter. It won't result in anything more than that. And quite frankly, I'll be surprised if we even get a warning letter considering the case I made. And I think it was a very compelling case. We had iron bacteria is something that is common in both collection systems and distribution systems, but finding it in our effluent is uncommon. I believe what happened is we had a dirty sample, a dirty sampler. Our composite sampler has an influence or a suction and a discharge tubing. It's like Nalgene or Tygon type of tubing. It's notorious for building up some bacterial growth in that tubing. And I think probably what happened is we had some growth in there that sloughed off into our sample. I can't prove it. We do clean those fairly regularly. I don't think we've been replacing the tubing as often as we should. So we've implemented a program where that tubing, regardless of how clean or dirty it looks, gets replaced on a quarterly basis. You know, this is more just about pride, and, you know, for us, it was, you know, everybody that works at the treatment plant know there was no way. Our suspended solids that was taken at the same time from the same sample was completely in the normal range. I made a very strong case, but because of the impossible standards that we have to meet, and it's DEQ playing their no risk game, right? It is very difficult to get them to agree to invalidate data, and they said they were not able to do it for us. But there's no real penalty. We have to have 3 of these events within, say, the course of a year to have any significant disciplinary action taken. This is a warning letter. However, we're frustrated because we know it was not representative of our finish of our effluent water quality, and it was not effluent of the efficiency and the effectiveness of our treatment system. But because we were unable to prove it conclusively, the decision that we must report the results stands. So,
all right. Well, good. It was a good try. And let's move on to unfinished business, unless you have any other comments, John? Or how about Cameron, do you have a comment?
Did you touch base on staffing, John? Where you're going to keep the position open? Or?
We are. We've gotten two applicants. One I don't think would be a good fit. The other one would be a good fit, but it would be the third relative of the same family to work at the authority. And in this case, these would be two people that work side by side in the field. And I'm reluctant to hire a third family member based on that condition alone. I know that Leonard and you know, these are people that would report directly to Leonard. I have to respect Leonard's opinion about these hires as well. And as of yet, we do not believe that we've got an adequate candidate pool to choose from. So because of that, we have decided to leave the job posting open with the hope that we get some additional applicants and can widen our candidate pool.
Cameron, you have one other comment?
I have, on the family. When I was at SDAO, they had brought it up on situations with family within, and it did turn into quite the lawsuit, and unfortunately that happened in our fire district. So I'm not a big favor, and especially, you know, after George Dunkel brought it up, we're such a small community about it, you know. It'd be different if we had, 100 employees and, more things, but I think we're opening that up to worms. So.
Well, the employee handbook allows it, but that doesn't mean it's a good idea. What I don't want to do is to set us up for a situation where somebody is held back from promotion because we can't get ourselves in a situation where one family member is supervising another. And I think there's a distinct possibility of that eventually being the case in this particular situation. I mean, I haven't contacted anybody and told them no, but I do believe that it's important to get a broader candidate pool before we make a decision.
All right. Thank you, John.
Okay. You're welcome.
Thank you for your comment, Cameron. Let's move on to item number 6, unfinished business, the wastewater master plan.
Yeah, the wastewater master plan is on track for us getting a draft by November 1st, which is only several weeks away. They are working hard to get the model calibrated and finished. One thing I learned that I didn't realize until just recently is that in order for them to put together this wastewater master plan, they had to do some flow monitoring at a couple of key locations in our collection system. And that flow monitoring lasted 9 months. And that was done right before I came to work. I did not realize that. With that in mind, I understand a little bit more about how long it's taken to get the plan. But they are on track to, as promised, and I told them this is a promise we need them to keep, is we are on track to have a draft of that by November 1st. The contract extension only goes to the end of the year. So once we get that draft, I would ask everybody to give it a thorough review as quickly as we can so that we can get our comments back, they can incorporate our comments, and get us a final copy before the end of the year. So that's right. That's the status on that.
So November 1st, we're looking forward to it.
Absolutely.
Item B under unfinished business, the water management conservation plan, was that finally approved? Excuse me. Ann is dancing over at her house. So we still comment.
I just was going to acknowledge everything that John just told us, and I would strongly support the notion of him setting some sort of reasonable deadline for us to get that done, because I don't know about the rest of you, but this is going to be a challenge to read and consume this document, and it's going to be important in the interest of keeping it moving for us to have a deadline to get our comments back to John.
How big a document do you think this is, John?
Well, I would expect it to rival the size of our water master plan. So for those of you that remember reviewing that, I would expect something of the same magnitude.
All right, thank you. How about our water management and conservation plan? What's the status?
The status is the final plan has been approved. It is over and done with in terms of the water conservation plan. We heard back from the Oregon Water Resources Department. The housekeeping revisions that were requested at Parametrics were done. It was resubmitted. It's been re-reviewed, and it's been approved in its entirety. I will say that we are still waiting for something called a final order, which will have as much bearing on our water rights discussion as it does the water management and conservation plan. And I'm expecting that probably sometime this week, next week at the latest. Once I have that, we are ready for me to give my final recommendations regarding our water rights. I've already hinted at what those are going to be, anticipating on what the final order is going to say. But just in case I'm surprised, because we do have somebody new in the role of reviewing these plans, and maybe that person's got a slightly different take than the person that did the first review. The plan itself is done. It's final. It's been approved. We can call the plan done. I believe this will be the last time we need to see the water conservation plan on our agenda. And I plan to replace it at our next meeting with a line item for water rights, in which I will reaffirm, I'm assuming, my final recommendation. I do believe they're going to put a development limit on our water right, which means even if we expand Horn Creek, they still wouldn't certify us for the full amount of our permit. Where it stands right now, we're going to partially perfect, which means certify, the water that we are currently using and can demonstrate beneficial use for, with the intent to file a permit extension for the remainder. That is pretty clearly the best course of action. As you guys know, we've been talking about this a while. I've researched
John,
this thoroughly. Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but my sense is that we have moved off of the agenda on
an
item that was on the published agenda.
You're right.
So I appreciate, of course, all the work you're doing and all the knowledge that you have, but the water rights was not on the agenda for tonight.
I appreciate that. Thank you for keeping me in check. I need that sometimes. So please don't hesitate to do that.
Well, let's move on then to item C, the board director vacancy. Have we had any folks interested in serving with us? None.
Not at this time.
I'd like to make a suggestion as directors, if we have acquaintances that we know in the community, it might not be a bad idea if we do some personal recruiting. To ask somebody who you or I, we would think would be a good director to serve with us. So,
that's a term, correct, Tom? It's only from the rest of its year until June?
I believe that's correct. It'd be a short period of time, but it would be it'd be well spent because they learn basically that exactly how we operate. That might pique their interest to go to the election and try to be an elected director. But right. That's my thinking anyway. Okay, well, let's move on to item D, which is to change the TLC authorized site. Now, we just this evening approved the last set of minutes. So, Rochelle, is that the proper way to do that, that they would go ahead and approve new signers?
Now that the minutes have been approved from the last meeting, we just need you to come in and sign them. And then Ann can take them to the bank and get the ball rolling.
Am I the only person authorized to be on as a signer?
You are the chair of the board, so you have to sign the minutes, yes.
No, I mean...
You're signing the minutes, but
I need you to sign the minutes.
The signers are you as chair and John, and I'm already a signer.
So John is already...
The signed approved minutes have to be presented by me to the bank because I'm the only existing signer on the account.
Is there supposed to be only one or more than one?
Three.
So we and only me. Have... So who would they be? Me?
At the last meeting, we approved you and John as replacement signers for Carolyn and Kirk.
Gotcha.
And so... But I being the only signer now, I have to take the now approved minutes of last month's meeting in and verify with the bank, because I'm the signer, that this is a signed copy of the minutes. And so it's okay to let John and you come in and sign a new copy.
Oh, so we still physically have to go to TLC and sign their card.
Yes,
gotcha.
Yes, you will.
But, okay, you'll let us know when you presented that the minutes, correct?
Yes, I'll keep in touch with Rochelle on this because she's been more in touch with TLC directly than I have. But Rochelle and I'll coordinate what the next step is after you sign the minutes of the meeting.
Okay, I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay,
let's move on to new business unless anybody has any other questions about that. Okay, special rules of conduct for in-person meetings. We have a problem with that, and I'm going to pull it up here on my computer because we didn't get a copy. There we go. Okay, this is a two-page revision that are rules of conduct for a public meeting. One was, the first page was already one of our policies, and the second page is related to a public health or a public health threat environment. And in this rule, it currently says it's defined for these purposes as the potential for community spread of contagious infection in Tillamook County is determined by the Oregon Health Authority. The problem here is in Rule 2, in-person meetings may be convened when the Tillamook County community transmissions is determined by the Oregon Health Authority to be at a lower or moderate level at the time. And there is, in that rule, was a link to the Oregon Health Authority indicators tableau public. And it was a link that showed whether it was low, medium, high, or whatever. Unfortunately, they don't do that anymore. In your packet, there were three indicators pages that showed First two were from the CDC, and they measured cases in, as between Wednesday through Thursday, or Wednesday through Tuesday. And the other item measured cases was from the Oregon Health Authority, and it's from Sunday through Saturday. So they're off a little bit. One is kind of confusing because it says it has like 57% in this area, but the 57% reflects the possibility of being exposed to someone. What are your chances of getting it? And that's 57%. They don't explain it well. But that's what it's designed to do. The other CDC shows that we're all in pretty good shape. The Oregon Health Authority's website concerning COVID-19 in their public health indicators no longer show that low or moderate or whatever, but they do show actual cases. And then next to it, it'll show transmissibility, but it isn't exactly the same thing. They call it a percentage of a population of 100,000. And it should have said transmissibility in 100,000, because they had us down for about 57%. The latest one shows that we up to 72%. Well, we're, if we're within someone who is infected, yes, 72% of the time you're probably going to get infected yourself. But what it, this, the Oregon Health Authority does show is a exact number of cases for the last week, and that exact number of cases that I just looked at is 20 in the last week. Now, if you, what we, our task is today is to come up with a new measure for low, moderate, substantial, or high. And about the most practical way I can see to do that is to take that exact number of cases for when we look at it to determine if the 2 weeks from now we can have our meeting in person. And determine our exact number of residents in Tillamook County, which is about 25,000. So I figured the math, we take 20 cases divided by 25,000 people and percentage that out, it's like 0.08%. 20 people out of our county are currently infected. So we need to come up with numbers that reflect low, moderate, substantial, or high. So do we have any suggestions? What would be a low percentage? Anything under what percentage? Ann? Can't hear you.
There we go. Okay, I have it. I have a few thoughts of what you laid out there. One of the things that I didn't hear you comment on, forgive me if you did, was the third column on the right-hand side of the Oregon Health Authority report is the column about test positivity.
Yes.
I was very concerned to note that Tillamook County is the highest county in the state when it comes to test positivity. That's concerning to me. But I also realize, and we all know, that there have been people that we know personally and many others, I'm sure, that have done home tests, tested positive, gone through the routine, not going to work, not or isolating and all that sort of thing. So that high test positivity percentage for Tillamook County is of the people who are getting tests, and we have no idea what the actual test positivity is across the area. So,
well, it's 20.
Well, no, that's the number of new tests in the last week. That's
no,
not
I think that's the number of people tests. Who have it.
It says at the top of the column, new cases weekly, Sunday to Saturday. So that is not the total number of cases in the county. It's the total number of new cases recorded by the Oregon Health or the Tillamook County Health Department in the last week. So I guess one of the bottom lines to me is it's extremely hard to figure out how to approach this. And the other thing about Tillamook County, as we all know, is that a high percentage of the people that any of us might interact with in a restaurant or a business setting of any sort or meetings of other sorts that are in person, we have no idea like what the tourist population is bringing into the area in terms of infection and who might in that group be infected by contact they've had with people that don't live here and will never get reported as cases in Tillamook County. So I just find it extremely challenging and frankly very frustrating to try to identify a particular metric and to answer this question.
Well, this is we go back to the old way. They are measuring, and they said in Oregon Health Authority, they are measuring by the week. And by the week, they say that the transmission is determined to be at a low or moderate level at the time the public notice of we have of the meeting, or a substantial or high. And I agree with you, the metric is hard to determine, but transmissibility, they determine it, but is that the same as actual cases, or is that the ability to be infected? What does transmissibility mean? Sean, do you have a comment? You've been delving pretty heavily in this.
I do. I'm trying to find actually all my old stuff, but for some reason I'm having difficulty finding them. I think those metrics I was looking online, and I probably got to the point where I wasn't downloading them anymore. So I'm trying to go by memory, and I believe it was something in the neighborhood of 30 per week was high transmission, 20 per week was medium transmission, and 10 per week was low transmission. I believe that was, I think they were actually measuring it on a rolling two-week period, so I think it was 60 for 2 weeks. And I had all this up, and then of course I shut my computer down and I lost everything, so I'm trying to scramble to find it. But you know, I think we're better off picking a number, 20 cases, 30 cases, 40 cases, whatever that happens to be. I think when I was just looking at Tillamook County, we were at
20,
yeah. That was for 1 week, right? So that would essentially categorize us as a medium risk based on that.
Okay, well, that's our problem. We got to come up with a number. Now, you said that 20, okay, once again, please, 20 was low, or 10 low?
Yeah, I believe what it was, I believe it was, trying to remember now, it was 40, this was on a two-week basis, it was, I believe, 45 to 60 was considered high, 30 to 45 was considered medium, and 15 to 30 was considered low, or, but there might have been four levels.
I think there was, because they had lower, moderate, substantial or high, so I'm assuming there would be four.
But so wouldn't that depend on the total population of the county, so that you're looking at more of a percentage than just the raw number of cases?
That's what I was kind of leaning at, but like I said, I took that 20 number of new cases, as you pointed out, and put the, you know, divided by our population, and I just ballparked it at 25,000, and
right.
And that came out to 0.08%, which is like 1% of the population. Is that's a seems to me like a pretty low, but there are those who still, as you pointed out, still have the disease or the infection, you know, maybe for 2 weeks, or they were reported the previous week. John, you had a comment?
Maybe just a comment or question for the group. These results that are reported on these websites, I assume that these are people that have gone in and probably done PCR tests at urgent cares and things of that nature, the places that report these results to the Oregon Health Authority. The difficult thing, as you all know, and it only makes the decision tougher, but just want to point it out, is how common home testing kits are. And, you know, the question remains, I'm willing to bet that probably 80% of the tests that are administered in this county are self-administered and not reported, and the results aren't reported at all. Would you all probably agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I think that's a pretty good guess. So I don't know how to say it. When I had it last time, I went and told my doctor to record it just for that reason. But how many people do?
Yeah.
So I don't know, how are we going to change this? We should probably make it a resolution, so instead of just a policy. No? Why not, Ann?
Well, I'm not sure right off the top of my head I can explain it to you, but there are legal definitions of ordinances, resolutions, and motions. And I don't believe that this rises to the resolution stage, but that would take some research to fully explain that.
Okay, the goal here, I want everybody to understand the goal. The goal is to meet in person. And we already have a contract, I don't know if it's written or verbal, with KCC, that if we do meet, we will, but if we don't meet, we still pay for the room. So we is that the correct, Rochelle, you have a something?
They have been very generous and are not charging us for the room if we cancel, so.
But it is reserved for us.
It is reserved for the next year.
Wonderful, wonderful. Anyway, what shall we call it, a policy, we still need to come up with some kind of a metric.
Well,
and I don't know how to do it.
Does it have to be a policy, or could it be a guideline?
No, this is a policy, because the first part of this policy reflects the conduct of persons in the room as well as the health situation. So it's kind of a two-part policy about in-person meetings. So we still have to come up with some kind of metric. And I'm really, at this point, I'm just really confused to how we should proceed. We can take a number like I just pointed out, like 20. If Sean, you could do a little more research and see if you can find out what they did before. I hate to table this, because I think we should be meeting right now in person. But I don't know how to go forward. Any suggestions?
I did finally find what I was looking for, and those numbers were correct. So we had four levels at one point. For counties with less than 30,000 people, it was less than 30 was minimal spread, 30 to 45 was moderate spread, 45 to 59 was substantial spread, and 60 was widespread. However, I agree with John, those case numbers don't mean a whole lot. So, we could set the standard, I just don't know that it's going to help us avoid risk.
How accurate?
Yeah, it might just, and I know, I think I was one of the ones that advocated for putting in plan the policy that we have. And things have changed and improved, which is really good. We may just need to make a decision at some point to eliminate that policy and just go straight to meeting in person. I don't know how to measure risk right now.
The only measure we got is either the CDC or the Oregon Health Authority, and in the past, the Oregon Health Authority has been where we go, but which seems the most practical, what people in Washington know about Oregon, and they're probably using the same numbers that Oregon has picked up and is transmitting to CDC. So I think Oregon Health Authority is the numbers we ought to use. But the way they display them are a little confusing. So, Anne, you have a suggestion.
I think I tracked what Sean was saying about those numbers, and I appreciate that there's a record in there for counties of different population sizes, because I think that is a significant divider. And I think that might be a reasonable approach. I think in the current instance, with the report we have in front of us, that would allow for a public meeting under this policy if we changed to that link, whatever that link is. And then I personally feel as though, as an abundance of caution, that it might be a good idea for now to maintain our expectation of social distancing and masking. I understand the challenges involved in that, but I also understand that there are even some amongst us that have challenges, and were we to contract this, we might have some serious health issues. So, and we have many, many, many community members that would be in that same boat. So, at the same time, so that would be kind of my feeling about it right now. We do have other public meetings that we have discussed and we want to be hosting, and maybe if these numbers hold where they are and we can do next month's board meeting in person at the community center, that could be kind of a trial balloon. So
I agree. Once again, Sean, would you go was it 15 to 30 considered low, 30 to 45 moderate, 45 to 60 would be substantial, and above 60 is high. Is that correct?
It was there. Yeah, there were. I mean, again, this is old. This was from the beginning of this year. And they're not doing that anymore. But the levels that they set the last time they did this was 45 to 60 was the highest category. 30 to 45 was the second highest category. 45 to 60, 30 to 45, 15 to 30. Hang on, let me pull it up again. Sorry. Less than 30 was minimal spread, 30 to 45 was moderate spread, 45 to 60 with substantial spread and greater than 60 with widespread.
And that was every 2 weeks, Sean?
That was every 2 weeks. So half that on a weekly level.
Okay.
So if we could substitute that for what we have in the language right now, then that would give us a metric to use and maintain everything else that's in the policy for now.
I think that's what I was thinking. We just had to come up with some kind of a number to, because the policy is written very well, and I think that was our dilemma. Now that they changed those websites, take the websites out of it and just say Oregon Health Authority COVID-19 measurements, and just call it that instead of put the websites in there. We can just look it up ourselves or just take care of it before we make our meeting notice. That works for me.
If I'm understanding it correctly, then if we set those metrics, then what we're saying basically is if we have 15 or less cases per week, we would meet in person. That's essentially what we're saying?
No, because in the original, let me read the original rule. In-person meetings may be convened when the Tillamook County community transmission is determined by the Oregon Health Authority, and then it states the there's a link there in the rule. It says Oregon COVID-19 public health indicators, Tableau public. That's the link, to be at the low or moderate level at the time of public notice of the meeting. So it'd be the bottom two levels.
Okay, thank you.
Does that, everybody agree with that? Okay.
Yeah, I do.
All right, well then.
At least it's something.
Yeah.
I don't remember, was that, did we actually adopt that policy via a motion? And so would
yes.
we need to then now amend that policy with a new motion?
Yes, we would.
All right, then I will make a motion to amend our in-person meeting policy to state that we would meet in person in the minimal spread category or the moderate spread category, and the categories would be minimal spread of less than 15 cases per week. Moderate spread would be 15 to 22 and a half cases per week. Substantial spread would be 22 and a half to 30 cases per week, and widespread would be greater than 30 cases per week.
Well said. That'll work.
I'll second that.
So we have a motion and a second that we adopt, revise our in-person meeting protocol to include the numbers that Sean just stated, and we have a second, so all those in favor, say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, no one opposed, it passes unanimously. All right, the next item up for bid.
That's for bid.
Get on the right page. Here we go. Paid Leave Oregon. John, you've got, I went through this. And it's still confusing, and I don't think it's fair to the individual, our enforcement. It is what it is. Can you explain it to us for us, please?
Yeah, well, it's kind of a complicated rule, and one that I would tell everybody is essentially still a work in progress. Even the Oregon Revised Statutes are in the amendment process. So this is a rule that the state of Oregon has kind of rushed to get through to meet their own deadlines. And there's There's still a lot of the details that have yet to be ironed out. But essentially what this is another paid leave program that is available to all employees in Oregon as long as they made $1,000 of salary as a member of the labor force during the previous year. And by the way, that doesn't even have to be earned in Oregon. That could be, that's just earned anywhere. So that's what determines eligibility or general eligibility for the program. Of course, there are other eligibility requirements, excuse me, to determine whether a particular employee is qualified for the plan or not. But this is not meant to replace any existing paid leave programs. This is meant to be a supplemental paid leave program. The way this works is beginning in January, employees have to begin contributing 0.6% of their income that will be withheld by employers. Am I wrong, Rochelle? That will be withheld by employers, and this money will go into a pool of money that is managed by the state of Oregon and paid out to those people who have qualifying conditions and take advantage of this leave program. For employers that employ more than 25 people, there's an additional requirement to pay for the employers to contribute 0.4%. And we do not employ that many employees, so we are exempt from the employer contribution. Although what I did want to say is if we chose to voluntarily pay the employer contribution, the only benefit to doing so is that we would be eligible for, excuse me, I just noticed my camera was off. We would be eligible for grants that would help us to offset the cost of backfilling a position that could come vacant by an employee who is on this paid leave program. My personal recommendation is that we don't voluntarily pay the additional 0.4% because we can't even find people, as we talked about, to fill full-time positions, let alone to temporarily backfill a couple of months while we have an employee who's out with this. So the benefit...
Cameron, you have a question?
Yeah, I have a problem with it when they say they have to meet the requirements. I mean, they're making it standard that everybody has to do this, but then you got to meet the requirements to get it. I mean, if you're paying into it, you should be able to get it.
Ann, you have a comment?
My comment is I am sympathetic with those comments, but we are not here to discuss the pros and cons of the project, the policy, and the law. It is a law. It's been passed by the state of Oregon, and we can discuss the pros and cons of it at some gathering that we have in our home. But we're here to decide what to do on behalf of the authority with regard to this new state law.
Rochelle, did you have a comment? Do you understand it?
John and I did quite a few trainings and webinars and whatnot. It's something that we get to do, and it's very similar to, I mean, the unemployment program. Not everybody gets to use it, but everybody puts into it. So,
is it difficult to manage our payroll software to adjust to this?
No, I think that part will be easy. There was a couple questions that we had in one of our last meeting webinar training things, was whether or not this 1.6% would come out pre-tax or post-tax, but they're still deciding on that.
Oh, they don't even know?
They have no idea.
But this goes into effect the first of the year, correct?
We have to start putting into it January 1st, and you cannot take out of it until September 1st.
And you had a final comment?
That being said, Rochelle, and John's comments along those same lines sort of leads me to think that I'm not feeling compelled or that the board should feel compelled at this meeting to make any decisions on this. It's very possible that there will be further developments and announcements. Rochelle and John have gone to the training. They're in the loop in terms of information. And I think I'm leaning more towards being aware that this is out there, giving it some thought, getting educated myself about it as much as I can, but waiting until maybe the agenda for the next meeting to look at possibly then taking action.
Okay, I think that's a good suggestion. So we'll just table this discussion until next month.
So we're geared in that direction, though, right, Rochelle? I mean, it's nothing that can't be managed in a short period of time.
No, our software will be able to do it easily.
Okay, great. Well, let's move on to item 8, guest questions and comments. John, Rochelle, have we had any comments or from anyone? Okay. Item number 9, chair director comments. I did have one, John. I noticed there are water loss again. I know this is a sore subject for you, but it was almost 30% this month, or last month. And where are we at with our testing program? Find us leak.
Well, it's ramping up. What should be noted is this is highly likely to not be a leak. It's much more likely to be multiple leaks that are small and scattered throughout our system. We've got our correlator, we've got everything we need. We are ramping up on this. We've been out a couple of days and started this process. I know that the frustration about these numbers is quite high. I've made a commitment to if not to remedy the situation, at least to drastically improve it. This is a situation that's just going to take time. When you think about all the miles of pipeline we have,
I'd like to suggest that we make this a priority. I know we have a lot of you have a lot of things on your plate, but this has been going on a long time, and we now have the testing equipment out there. I think, you know, we might want to move something aside and make this more of a priority. If it's multiple leaks, okay, fine. I can see how that would take time, but you know, the possibility of this, Cameron came up with a noted thing about the deal under the pipeline under the river. I don't know how we test that, but...
Isolate.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that, but these numbers are too big to not have a systemic problem somewhere. A lot of little leaks isn't going to come up to 30% of the water we produce. This is a major leak.
Well, we did.
The interesting thing about this month's numbers, looking at the graph, this month of September, the two previous years, they were low. Those numbers were low. So why all of a sudden did it jump up in September, in October. So it started in October 3 years ago, seems like, almost. I don't know.
No, actually it hasn't. We've had high water loss numbers since the early 2000s. And we are just now doing something meaningful to proactively go out and get it. I do want to stress to everybody that it is far easier said than done when you're running a water and a wastewater utility to push things aside and focus on one thing entirely. It's difficult for me to relay in the course of a single conversation how difficult that is. Just be aware that we do multiple things, all with a high priority. And, you know, wastewater and drinking water compliance aren't the least of them. And we've only got a staff of 9 people. And I just want to emphasize that there's no way we can drop everything and just focus on this. Even if we did, it would take a year. This is something.
Well, let me ask you this. Yeah. Are you testing every week, or are you testing once a month?
No, we're getting out, and we've made it a goal to test 1 day a week. But to do more than that would put us in jeopardy of creating other problems that could be even more serious.
Okay, fair enough. Does any other, we'll drop that then. Any other board member have anything, any comments before we recess for executive session?
I do.
Cameron?
Yeah, I got a couple. I had talked to Rochelle about this on the TLC line of credit. She stated that we're, $15,000 on that line of credit? That
we owe $150,000.
$150,000. And that we could bring this up at the next board meeting of possibly paying that off. But then she said, you know, we'd have to talk about it. So I'd like to see that maybe on the agenda for next month, the possibility of maybe just paying that off. We've got the money to do that. I don't think it put us in a site. The web page needs to be updated with John as our manager instead of Bert.
Rochelle, you had a comment? Excuse me.
Yeah, sorry. I am actually in the middle of changing web providers. Actually, we are moving to a new company.
Oh.
So that may be why there is some incorrect information on there, because they're trying to move everything over and I'm having trouble correcting everything on one side and then correcting it on the other side, and they haven't brought it over, and I'm trying to just pause right now until they get done.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any further comments?
Honey.
Yeah, on the water loss, we got to look at it this part. We put in the meters that will help us also, you know, detect the stuff between houses and stuff like that. I'd like to see us go at, you know, some of these lines, the old lines, the plastic, kind of maybe divide up in quadrants and work those section over piece by piece. You know, if we could, you know, chip away, I'd like to see this get, I don't know, would be managing for a water loss, maybe under...
You know, I think his comments about, you know, attacking it once a week, considering his other commitments, is a fair way to start. I mean, it is what it is. It is what we can do. I agree. It'd be nice to put our finger on it if we find one big one. But as long as we're working on it every week, I think that's a good thing.
Kind of the thing in the dam and the dike. Either that bad boy's going to big blow and we're going to have a big washout or something. And maybe that's what it's going to have to happen or something. But, you know, get them away. You know, we've got an old discipline.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see us get this under control within a year. So.
Well, that's a reasonable goal. So if there aren't any other comments, Sean, do you have anything on your mind? Okay, let's move on. It is now 6:16 p.m. and we will recess for executive session. And the employment-related performance of the Chief Executive Officer of...